connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web for the computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hey there, I'm Johnny Michaels Michaels, famed heir, and I'm here to buy NetSurfer Pro for $1 gazillion.
Oof, $1 gazillion. That's
$1 gazillion.
That's a lot of money.
You know that company Gazillion Games?
Oh yeah.
It's $1 for every game they made. They made one game.
Ah, okay, I see. What is $1 gazillion, which I assume is its own currency, equate to in US dollar?
Well, you see, it depends. It's actually more of like a security that you can then trade with other people, and it can be used to be exchanged for other securities, like this picture of a dog, and you can then sell that picture of a dog for $1 gazillion.
Interesting. Okay, so if I take this picture of a dog and then sell it for $1 gazillion, I mean, you've just sort of put this picture of a dog on my desk, so, like, what's to stop me from just, you know, just taking it, like, right now, like I'm currently doing, and slipping it into my pocket, and then just selling it later?
I mean, yeah, you can do that, I guess.
Interesting.
Wink.
You're interested in buying this. I would have to talk with my main host, but I think I would be interested at the very least. If you're serious about the deal and all.
All right, yeah. So in that case, let me just hash out my plans for NetSurfer Pro.
All right, yeah, sure. I'd love to hear it.
First, we're going entirely digital because digital is the future.
Yeah, that is true. We do famously record these on CDs and send them out to our listeners.
Mm-hmm. Next, we are going to actually pivot the topic a bit. We're going to talk about serial killers and people killed by serial killers, because that's what's doing well in analytics.
Ooh, but doesn't that seem a little disrespectful, though?
Well, I mean, every other podcast is doing it, so if you're going to criticize me, you got to criticize every other podcast, you know?
Well, that is true, yeah. Unfortunately, we can't actually criticize any one podcast. Yeah, all right, if everybody's doing it, I suppose that it's ethical. So, yeah, any other ideas?
Well, now we're also going to be recording everything via video and releasing on video platforms.
Oh, interesting, yeah. You know, that's a good point. We could have actually recorded these on VHSs the entire time and sent those out. That would have been, like, retro. But we're not doing that anymore since we're going all digital.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the next step then, of course, is to create a long-term brand synergy concept in which we invoke characters that then reappear later on, thus meaning that people have to re-listen to older episodes or stay kept up with new episodes, thus to maintain their knowledge of the series.
Huh. We don't really do that. I don't think so. Do you think we do that, Cypher? Hey, it's me, Cypher Spaghetti. We definitely don't do that. Yeah, that's true. All right. Bye, Cypher. He's not going to say anything on his way out. All right. Yeah, that sounds all really good. Man, you're really good at business here. Johnny Michaels Michaels, I believe is your name.
Of course. I learned it from the best. My father, Daniel Michaels Michaels.
Ah.
Of the Michaels fame?
Oh, yeah, the Michaels fame. So I'm curious, is Michaels a middle name? Is your last name Michaels-Michaels?
My last name is Michaels-Michaels. My middle name is actually Money.
Ah.
Johnny Money Michaels Michaels.
Johnny Money Michaels Michaels. Oh, wow, yeah, that's... Dang, no wonder you're so good at business. Well, yeah, we'd love to... Here, if you can just put this contract on the table here. Thunk.
Wait, this is your contract? You're making me sign?
Yeah, it's my contract. You did offer to buy us, and so, you know, we're usually the ones that, like, kind of put the first thing, and then you would come back and, like, you know, give us a counter negotiation. That's typically how business works. You know, you don't just sort of say you're going to buy something and then not really follow through with any of the details of it.
All right, hold on one moment. I think I heard my phone. Hello? Yeah, hold on. Let me just sign this contract real quick. And let me put my John Hancock on it. All right, then let me put my real name on it. All right, and then let me initial.
middle initial, which of course is M, last initial, which is also M, followed by another M, and I think we're all good here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. That was reminding me to silence my phone, but yeah, we've got a full contract here. We are now under the Michaels family, the Money Michaels fortune. I'm so excited for this long-term partnership.
Hey, Galen.
Oh, hey, what's up?
Just dropping in real quick. Did you see where my sole ownership contract went?
Oh, don't worry. It didn't go anywhere important. Slip.
Okay, good, because I was going to give that to the god Baethor, who was promising me riches in wealth, or witches. Maybe witches beyond my wildest dreams.
Oh, dang.
I hope it's a fun witch, like the one from Toho.
Yeah, not a bad witch, like the one from Hoto.
Hoto Mario.
Nice of the witch to invite us over for a picnic, eh, Luigi?
Honestly, the only thing you can do to make Hoto Mario better is to just do it in Owo speak.
Remember, when you pinch Wendy's pennies, they pinch back.
But see, that makes it sound like it's a Homestar Runner speech, though.
Hey, Strong Dad, I really, really, really like your Gamera costume.
Homestar, this is clearly Bowser Koopa. This has already gone way off the topic of what we were trying to do. So welcome to NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web. I am your host, Matt.
Yes, and I'm your co-host, Galen. Although today, we're switching things up a bit because it's actually a talk surfer show.
Oh, right. I walked into the wrong episode.
Yeah, if you could just walk out real quick and then walk back out.
All right, I'm back. What'd I miss?
Not much. I just kicked out the guy who was before you, Johnny Michaels Michaels. Johnny Money Michaels Michaels, if you've ever heard of him.
No, actually.
Yeah. Got him to sell his soul to us, but I'm now realizing that actually it probably wasn't worth much, especially compared to the god that you were almost convinced. It's a bad thing we only have one of those. We really need to get a printer.
Yeah. You know, we spent all our money on a wise mythical text interpreter who, that's of course what the job title is, mythical text interpreter, who was able to uncover the secret ruins and tell us how to make a contract with the blind god Baethor.
Yeah, and unfortunately that doesn't leave a whole lot of budget for, you know, office expenses.
Yeah, I know. I'm running out of so many paperclips.
Oh, man.
How am I going to finish my paperclip sculpture without these?
Yeah. I don't have any post-it notes, because that's what we use as soundproofing here,
mm-hmm.
If you could tell.
Yeah.
But, well, today we've got a Talk Surfer show, which is a whirlwind ride through whatever we want, and I'm your host this week, Galen.
And I'm your co-host, Matt.
And we've got a variety of topics today, one of which we, longtime viewers might have heard us allude to most recently in that recent bit.
It's not Valorant.
It's not Valorant. Although I, you know, famously I do know everything about Valorant, mm-hmm. But today we're going to talk about something I only know most things about, and that is the website known as
Twitter. Bum, bum, bum!
Which is, legally, every time you mention Twitter, you have to add a bum, 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 because it's just sort of that kind of website.
Actually, now more, it's like... Yeah, Twitter is going to shit more than usual.
Yeah, so Twitter was already not a particularly great website.
Everybody's kind of grabbed their violins and is just waiting for their piece of driftwood to sink into the ocean.
Yep. So let's do a bit of a breakdown. A breakdown of the timeline.
Yes.
Inciting incident. Twitter is formed.
Yes. This was a bad mistake. This was universally agreed as a bad idea.
Yeah. Okay. So Twitter, to very briefly just summarize... Just to talk about why people go on Twitter. Twitter was basically really useful for just kind of getting out a lot of, like, quick takes, a lot of, like, shorthand you know, shorthand, small text form content, sometimes video, sometimes pictures, but mostly it's about that 280 character limit, most previously 140 character limit.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very good for doing the equivalent of like texting a random thing to the group chat,
right?
You know, except in a public spectacle.
It's sort of, so the reason I got on it, and I think part of why it blew up, is because it let people follow like celebrities and artists and creators that they otherwise wouldn't have really been able to hear from. Like, I follow a ton of like comedians and podcasters and streamers and stuff on it. It is sort of like its own sort of blog or press release form for those people. It's a medium to get a lot of words out to a lot of followers.
Yes.
It does not function well as a peer-to-peer social network.
Not at all.
And people try to do that, but it's not. It shouldn't.
So, okay.
Twitter is for, like, Weird Al and Danny DeVito.
Exactly. It's for, like, Twitter, I think, in its ideal form, is sort of the literal, like, the, like, millennial joke of, like, here's a picture of my breakfast. It should be that, but as a website, is here's a random thing I've been thinking about. Here's a random thing I've just recently seen. I genuinely don't think we can talk about the most recent thing that happened with it without at least mentioning the Dark Ages from 2016 to 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So if you didn't know, we had a president at the time, and I'm not going to say a whole lot more. All I'm going to say is that tweets were official policy from that administration.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not that's still the case is kind of shaky. We get a lot of tweets from our current president over, you know, just like things that are like, you know, we should do stuff about marijuana legalization or whatever. And we don't really get a lot of action from that. As far as our previous administration, though, it was explicitly tweets are policy. And I think that that is kind of what inevitably led to the current topic that we are going to name, because he's very funny to dunk on.
Yes.
Elon Musk.
So here's the play-by-play. So Elon Musk, his posts get deleted from Twitter because he spreads misinformation about the pandemic.
Yes.
He says, he jokes he will buy Twitter for, like, what, $420 per share? Something like that. I don't remember if Twitter was the one he joked about $420 per share, or if it was selling Tesla shares for that much.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure which one, but it was supposed to be this big, like, meme thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of he's like, I'm going to buy Twitter and make it, you know, better or whatever.
It should be noted Twitter was a publicly traded company, and buying would mean buying out every share that the shareholders have, and thus going private.
Yes.
Then the FTC steps in and says, hey, you said you were going to do this. You have to do this, because the FTC doesn't fuck around with Elon Musk.
Yes.
This is not the first time they have gotten on his ass for something he said or done that, like, really goes outside the boundary of what a CEO is allowed to do.
I believe previously on Twitter, he literally said, like, I think Tesla stock should be lower. And then it lowered, and it was pretty clear. It was pretty obvious that he was essentially gaming the market, because he knew that his tweets could affect his stock price.
Yeah.
So that he could then purchase more stocks. Mm-hmm. You know what? I should add the obvious disclaimer of this has not been researched. I am not making the objective claim that this did happen. I believe this is what happened, but I might be wrong. Do not sue us.
Right. So Elon Musk is forced to buy Twitter for the amount he stated,
which was about $44 billion total.
A lot. He then fires most of the employees at Twitter, except like two or three people. There's only one PR person left and only like one or two QA people left. He announces a slate of features, most prominently being a subscription service for verification. Verification means you have a blue check mark on your profile, and previously it means you are who you say you are. This is like, if LeBron James had a blue check mark, you know that that's the real LeBron James. Or, you know, if a big one, Joe Biden has a blue check mark, that's the actual Joe Biden.
Yes.
If there's a Joe Biden that doesn't have a blue check mark, then that's fake. And they say something like, I'm going to come. That's a joke.
Yeah.
A joke Biden.
A joke so, Biden.
He says that this subscription will be available for $20 as a way to bring power to the people and destroy the Twitter caste system.
Yeah.
Also, he says comedy is now allowed on Twitter.
Yes.
Next step, he gets sued by the state of California because he did not give the legally required 60-day warning for layoffs in California. He begs other people to come back that he fired because he fired them based on lines of code, which is a stupid idea if you're a coder.
Yeah,
because if you're a bad coder, you will write more lines of code than a good coder. A good coder is efficient.
Yes.
Writing less lines is literally like the goal of efficient coding because it means the computer has less steps to process.
We're going to get into this more, but this is part of why I love this so much, because there's very chunky, it's the world of like metrics first business colliding with reality in some of the best possible way.
Right. Also, he realizes that he needs developers to go and build these features he's requesting, so he begs people to come back after he already fired them illegally. Let's see. Next up, Stephen King makes fun of him and says he won't pay $20 for a checkmark. Elon Musk says, how about $8? And then goes publicly to say that it'll be $8 instead of $20. This is where a lot happens at once.
So I know one of the things is that he said that verification will essentially put you into a like higher class.
Oh, yeah.
So that if you have a verified account, your posts will be seen before those without verification of any kind. Literally destroying the whole point of
the caste system.
But also, as it has turned out recently, that is only the case for like a specific verified accounts page, which you access somehow through the app. This is an app that was already borked before this, for clarity.
Yeah. Okay, so people realize that if anybody can have a checkmark for $8, there's nothing that signifies that something is an official account, so they can, you know, make imposter accounts for whatever they want. And so people with blue checkmarks start changing their like header name to Elon Musk and getting his profile picture without changing their @. It's very hard to change your actual @ username. If you're verified, at least, but you can change how it appears in like the black bold text.
Yes.
However, both are always visible on Twitter. So you can see that it's, you know, it's not Elon Musk, it's The Onion.
Yeah.
Just pretending to be Elon Musk. And they start posting funny things like, I love drinking piss.
Yes. Yes.
Or I've made a huge mistake. Yeah. Elon Musk starts banning these accounts.
Some of which are extremely notable. I know one of the biggest ones was H3H3 Productions go down with the ship.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, he finally did something good. Yeah. H3H3, not Elon.
Yeah.
So, a bunch of big accounts get banned. Elon Musk now says that you have to have parody very visible on your account if you're making a parody account.
Yeah.
People start doing that and posting things anyways and getting banned again.
Yeah.
So comedy is not legal on Twitter. Let's see. Next, he announces that there will be an official tag to show that you are the official account and not an imposter. AKA, there's another verification now. Verification 2.
There's a worse verification.
And then later, that is changed to say that it's the same verification. It's just if you click on the checkmark, it tells you which verified it is. Whether it's somebody who paid for it or someone who is official. They start rolling these out, and first he says it's going to go to, like, businesses and political entities and governments, and this apparently includes a lot of far-right misinformation sites and hate groups, fascist groups, you know? People catch him on this. He rolls it back for everyone. And now people are impersonating accounts. There's people already running scams by paying $8 to look like a celebrity. There are people shitposting. There's a pretty famous Nintendo shitposter who has paid $8 for the blue checkmark just to shitpost as if they were Nintendo, posting things like Mario giving the middle finger. Or I think they did the Peter Griffin I'm coming voice line.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's a shit show there. Tesla's stock has been crashing because it was used as collateral for Elon's purchase.
Yep.
Meaning that if he can't get a a like return on Twitter or make it profitable at all, which it never was, then Tesla, he'll have to sell Tesla shares, which will make it crash. He was caught like transferring engineers from Tesla to Twitter, which counts as like embezzling funds, essentially, or yeah, resources from a publicly traded company to a privately traded company, which is another FTC violation.
Oh man.
He unbanned like people posting hate speech. People have been posting hate speech and not getting banned since his tenure began.
Yeah, yeah. There was a 500% uptick in like one specific word.
Yeah.
I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's so like it's not all a funny shit show, but a lot of it is a very funny shit show.
I think, yeah, there's a lot of frustrating things, and the stuff like the hate speech is horrible. It's like very telling who Elon is, in case you are already unsure.
Yeah. His most recent tweet for the US election was like, I believe in a balance of powers from the right and the left, so everybody should vote Republican because the president is a Democrat, as if that's actually how it that works.
Yeah.
But we've basically known how Elon is this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I say we in the broad sense, but like, you know, we know the game at this point, as far as that is concerned. It's Elon is essentially banking that the alt-right crowd will like him enough to actually, that's a good point to bring up. If the alt-right crowd likes him, what happens next? Like, most of the alt-right crowd does not have funding. Those that do have funding, those that, you know, the Koch brothers, sorry, the Koch brother singular, like, you know, has a lot of money, but no other billionaire seems to really like Elon Musk. You know, no hedge fund is going to put in money to support Twitter just for the sake of,
I don't think it's Twitter. I think it's propaganda, essentially.
Yeah.
He, being a billionaire, he has a vested interest in the party that will allow him to commit labor violations and wage theft.
Yeah.
And won't tax him. And so owning a major source of information online and then unbanning the people who post misinformation and further spreading that misinformation benefits him directly, even if not this direct financial way.
Yes.
Also, I am still thinking he didn't actually want to buy Twitter.
Yes. Yes. See, okay. Here's where it gets funny for me, is that there is a real politique consequence to this of, like, essentially owning the information system. However, that is a very short-sighted goal, as it almost always is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fundamentals of a business is something that Elon Musk is actually extremely bad at, despite what a lot of, you know, a lot of like Forbes articles would say about him. Like, Elon Musk fundamentally does not understand business, and it is hilarious seeing this whole saga from the first half because it's very clear. Like, this is one of the most clear aspects of this. This does not require an expose where it turns out that, like, he will show up to work in a bad mood and say, who am I going to fire today? Real thing that he does. This is like him purchasing a terrible, terrible money sink, having everything crashing around him, and essentially trying to salvage it by like trying to own the messaging. And I just don't think the messaging is going to go well for him before the business side of this goes very poorly, because firing a whole bunch of your developers is bad, especially when you have, you know, a million goddamn, you know, like, different ideas that are created and abandoned entirely on a whim and based on whether or not Stephen King dunks on you. The fact that he purchased this company in the first place is a bad idea, which is a natural consequence of just saying you're going to purchase a company on Twitter, because, again, the perception here is that Twitter is intent. Like, it has been that for years. And so, you know, I tomorrow could say I'm going to purchase Twitter, and no one would bat an eye because I'm not a billionaire. But yeah, unfortunately, like, you know, when you are enough of a public figure that those sorts of statements have weight, you have to actually back them up. And so you get actual governmental branches on your ass about these things. I also think it's hilarious that the verification kerfuffle essentially started because he didn't like some Verify people. Like, okay, a problem with Twitter, I will say, and this predates Musk, is that even though verification is literally just I am who I say I am, I think that I would struggle to argue against the idea that verified had a prestige effect. I don't think it had it as much as people tend to think. There is a reason that, like, when they, you know, mass banned Alex Jones or our previous president, like, that had a genuine sort of good positive effect, because there is, if nothing else, the view of legitimacy from it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't solve that problem by giving it to everyone for a nominal fee.
Mm-hmm.
You also especially don't solve that problem when it is literally a caste system based on A, who can afford $8 a month, and B, who is a news website or what have you, a governmental Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's using like dog whistles and stuff like that, like comedy and free speech, to coax his followers into just ignoring whatever logical, like, consequence these things have, saying that they're all for a good purpose, when in reality they're just self-serving. It's the image of Apu jumping in front of Snake, and it's like, you know, Elon Musk, valid criticisms, and the person taking the bullet is weird nerds.
Yes.
It's like, people are like, oh, well, you can impersonate people on Twitter, and it's like, even though he said comedy is legal, it's like, oh, you know, such and such, such and such. And it's the criticisms are getting brushed off as if they were heroic or just, Homestuck reference, when in reality it's just like, no, these are natural things that are going to come about because of poor business decisions.
Yeah.
Also, so my big thing is that the blue checkmark can't just become subscriber now.
Yeah.
There are symbols have meaning. In when that meaning is reinforced over years and years, it becomes common to the point where you can't just give it a new meaning. The way I'd say it is, like, if a green light was changed to mean stop, or it was, like, used in some other context that had nothing to do with the concept of go, then people would get it confused constantly, because up until then, it had always meant go. And so asking somebody to completely reframe it is like asking them to change, you know, the definition of a word, or I don't know, maybe not that, but asking them to reframe it is like, I don't know, asking them to just brainwash themselves, I guess.
It's, yeah.
It's that humans pick up on patterns, and you can't just present a new pattern and think it's going to go okay.
There is a reason that the Red Cross is, like, extremely adamant about enforcing their copyright over the Red Cross symbol for this exact reason. Because if tomorrow Elon Musk bought the Red Cross and then was like, we're going to give out the Red Cross to anyone who pays me $8 a month, then, you know, anyone could, this is a more obvious, like, kind of hyperbole real life example, yeah, but anybody could pay $8, put a Red Cross on their shoulder, and then, I don't know, you know, go out and rob a bank or whatever and be like, don't worry, it was the Red Cross who did it.
Yeah. Or like, if you could, like, buy a thing that says ambulance and put it on your car and be like, no, it's an ambulance.
Yeah.
Like,
oh my God. Yeah. That's a staple of certain types of theft is that you, like, get a, you know, a police badge looking item, pretend to be a policeman, and then, you know, walk up to somebody and be like, I need to search your car for whatever. Please get out of the car.
Oh, no, that's Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm thinking of Doctor Who.
No. Yeah. So you can't just change the meaning of the symbol completely and expect people to ride with that as if that's what it were all along.
Yeah.
That is why it's still a problem that even though you can click on the blue check mark and see this person is a Twitter blue user, stupid name for a subscription, by the way.
Yeah.
Twitter blue me, more like, that still doesn't work for most people. Because they're so used to blue checkmark meaning this is the real deal that they have to really, really be mindful of catching themselves before they think, I can trust this person to be who they say. You know, like I said, I've already seen, like, LeBron James scammers pretending to be LeBron James with a blue check mark just to get people to buy into scams.
Yeah.
And the Nintendo thing, it's like, the other problem is that with Elon mainly announcing these via tweets, people who aren't super plugged into Twitter aren't going to know these changes. There's no, like, press release. It's just a 280-character tweet. So, like, the average schmo doesn't know that the blue checkmark's definition has changed.
Yeah.
They're going to see Mario flipping the bird and be like, I'm not giving Nintendo any more money. They have ruined my son.
They've ruined my son. My son can't stop flipping the bird at me now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to end this segment with just a couple of, like, statements of intent, as it were. Not necessarily statements of intent. A sort of, like, here is what I would generally, like, say as far as the ethics of continuing to be on Twitter. Keep being on Twitter if you want. I'm going to keep being on Twitter until it, like, literally actively starts, you know, antagonizing me. I've already been trying to, like, get through to another avenue, like Tumblr or something. But, like, you know, a lot of artists use Twitter. A lot of, content creators still use Twitter. And you should continue to do that. Paying for the subscription, honestly, like, I feel like, here's the thing. I would not accept a sort of, like, but you paid for it anyway excuse. Because, like, 90% of the people who are paying for it for 1 month are immediately going to cancel it once the meme stops being funny. And, like, past that, it's going to be, like, scammers and people who don't know better.
People with hexagon profile images.
Exactly. Now, I did see some people, like, people who I respect essentially saying, like, listen, you know, my art is my livelihood. If this has actual consequences, then I will continue, then I will pay to keep this thing. And that, I think, is extremely fair, is, like, there is just a lot of people, especially once, like, the Tumblr art purge happened, that need to continue to use Twitter for literal business purposes. And so, like, I do not necessarily bemoan anybody for needing it for that purpose. What I would say at the very least is make 100% sure, because there is a lot of misinformation about it, that there are actual benefits before you pay that $8.
Yeah.
Because as of right now, and this could change, but as of right now, there really isn't, beyond a single tab on an app that I'm sure you have to click two other tabs on the app to get to. Like, right now there is no reason to have it. Everybody still has the same broken algorithm that Twitter has always had.
No reason to have it if you don't need it for your identity.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, realistically, the ethics of an individual person is, like, one individual person giving $8 is not going to make Elon Musk any less rich. But don't worry. Twitter, he will absolutely be less rich by the end of this.
Yeah, he already is less rich.
Yeah. So, yeah. And if you pay it for shitpost purposes, I mean, good on you, honestly. Like, it, again, it's going to die and you're going to cancel it pretty, like, you know, within, like, a couple months. And so keep pissing off Elon Musk as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
That's really all I have to say about it, this is, like, 10%, 25%, like, genuine problems, but 75% really, really funny.
It's pointing and laughing at a billionaire losing money, which is really funny.
Yes.
Yeah. It's an analogy I wanted to make was that it's like if Elon Musk joked about, hey, wouldn't it be funny if this leopard ate my face? Then the leopard proceeded to eat his face, and then instead of stopping the blood, he tried to sell t-shirts with the famous face-eating leopard on them.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all to say about that. Let's go to something very good.
Yes, yes. So we have done an entire episode over various, like, creepypasta-esque media.
An entire month.
An entire month.
2 months, one might say.
It 1.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Month, 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 month. Spooky month, month, month. month is very hard to say in succession. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we follow Tony Petscop on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And
at Pressed Yes.
Yep, at Pressed Yes. He is great. Honestly, very good tweeter. Just kind of, you know, talks about random things, gives us more Petscop trivia. But very recently he put out a tweet that was like, hey, are there, you know, any interesting, like, you know, web series that I haven't caught on because I've kind of been out of the scene for a bit. And one that he retweeted, the only one I believe he retweeted with a please watch this, was a little series called Via Verde.
Via Verde. It's so good.
So I believe that it means Green Valley in Spanish.
Yeah.
It is an Argentinian project, which I will say is honestly really refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the it's mostly in Spanish, but there is a version that has English subtitles added via YouTube.
Yes. And so the crux of this is that there are two videos, really three videos, because one is like fully Spanish and then one is the English subtitles.
There's subbed and unsubbed.
Yeah, there's basically subbed and unsubbed. But the really interesting thing is that the crux of this, the sort of in meta version of this is a sort of, is kind of a I tripped over it while on a walk in the woods type story. It's, you know, a guy has found VHS tapes randomly in the woods along with a small assortment of items, one of which is like a statue, and is uploading the footage upon watching it because there's some effed up S in it.
Mm-hmm. Some effed up S.
The footage itself, first of all, I want to give full props. If you don't like spooky things, I would genuinely say you should watch the first 3 minutes of it just because it is so good as a tone piece for the PS1. Like, I have slight criticisms about the technological aspects of the PS1. I mean, like, extremely slight. But, like, the tone piece that it sets is so amazing at the front.
Yeah. So, it's a found footage PS1 horror type thing, much like Petscop. It opens, though, with, like, the title screen, which is on point. And then it has an intro cutscene, which is, like, a very Ghibli almost, like, video of just sort of a seaplane coming into view. Reminds me a lot of Porco Rosso and other Miyazaki air machines.
Yeah, and like I it is either genuinely animated or like it has a certain like filter in Blender or something to make it look 100% animated. It is exactly on point for the kind of thing you would see in the PS1 era with, mm-hmm. you know, like transitioning from an animated, you know, little section to like your character in the model of the airship to enter your name and stuff.
Yeah, it has an Animal Crossing type opening where like a conductor walks up to you and is like, what's your name? Are you new here? What's your gender?
Yeah.
And the player enters Test 05.
Yeah. So one interesting thing is that at the very front, there's a bunch of random text. It's not random, but it's like, you know, it's very science-y text. And, you know, once, like you said, once it gets to the character's name, it's Test 05. The place that they end up going after they, like, fill out their card is a place that seemingly requires, like, you know, a certain developer input because they go to Debug Shima.
Mm-hmm. It's like a test build or something like that. What proceeds, so we're not going to do a complete go over.
Yeah.
Might save that for the future. But what proceeds is an exploration of a sort of like mix of Animal Crossing and Boku no Natsu Yasumi, a very like life sim PS1 style game. You meet the mayor, who's this wolf. He keeps bringing up, you know, the next election and asking for favors. You meet some of the other townsfolk, including some kids.
And when you go to meet the kids, it's the first horror bit because he shows you around to like various little houses that have flags on them. And he's like, and here's Jimmy from Ireland. And it's like it very much immediately hits you with the horror stuff because it's like their portrait is like a fucked up little picture. And you get a, you know, a very audible like,
Yeah, glitchy data moshed image and audio.
Yeah, you get that for all of them except for the very last one, which is like a little cat guy I don't remember what his
Mateo
name is.
I think.
Yeah, Mateo from Argentina, and it just shows his picture normally over static or over silence. But when it immediately shows you, it shows him like doing an animation of like trying to run away and then like, you know, glitching out essentially. As though he is like sort of lucid in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then the crux of what immediately then happens, after a honestly a very funny little bit, that we won't spoil for this, is that, it like cuts, like hard cuts, and there's some text that says like, anomaly X, like spontaneous level generation. And this is seemingly then the crux of the video, is after showing some kind of scene, after showing some kind of weird anomaly, quote unquote, it cuts to the next one.
Yeah. The anomalies, just a quick go over. The first one after, by the way, the UI, the player goes through like the UI for the game, like a town map and everything. Very well made.
Yes.
Like, the attention to detail in terms of the design is on point. I'm not super sure about the technological, like sort of quirks of the PS1.
So, yeah. I will have... here is my literal 2 cents of criticism. This does not detract from the series in any way. I love this series. Here's the 2 little bits. One... texture warping is one of those famous things that the PS1 does. There does not seem to be any texture warping for this. Now, for something that is like in a Mega Man Legends style, I don't know if the textures would actually warp. That's usually for like, you know, tank control-esque type games. But for being one of the most famous like technological aspects of the PS1, the fact that there's nothing of it is like a little bit like, meh. And 2, the models themselves, I believe, are like a little too high definition. It's on a line. It's on a line where it's like, I think that if this were a Dreamcast game, it would have like absolutely like killed it 100%. Like, no questions asked. This is absolutely what the Dreamcast can do. For the PS1, it's like just a little bit on the line, I think. But I definitely think that the tone piece and like the technological aspects of it are a lot lower than to the like thematic elements, yeah. The story being told,
the
and
mood,
the
story, the atmosphere.
Yeah. One other little thing. I know that the crux of it is that it is a science, like people who are analyzing this, a sort of SCP style, but I do think that the movements themselves, even for a tank control game, are like a little robotic. I think that a real person would be just a little bit less robotic than they are. But again, those are minor criticisms to a series that I very much love.
Yeah. So there is like this whole section where the player goes through a series of rooms in the woods. Each room is related to one of the 7 deadly sins.
Yep.
So, like, for greed, there's a bunch of piles of gold. For sloth, there's, like, a bunch of TVs and a Spanish song about somebody, like, not wanting to work.
Yeah.
There is, for wrath, there's, like, a clip from the Oppenheimer speech.
Yeah. For Envy is, like, my favorite one because it's a whole bunch of figures with, like, slightly too realistic eyes looking at you just all around.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good.
Yeah. At the end of this, though, the player finds themselves going into presumably heaven. They wind up at a church where they see a priest giving a speech,
which is its own cut essentially, because the priest's speech and such has like a minorly floating or like phasing in and out object.
Yeah.
Which your local co-host here actually was the one to point out to me.
Yeah, I'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, absolutely.
The player then follows. There's another anomaly of like the statue in the town center moving around when the wolf's not looking. There is an anomaly of like the wolf and an archaeologist character and a robot, like a scientist character, going into a back alley that the player kind of glitches into. And then they go into like a weird portal, and then they go into this dark forest with like this creepy moving figure in the background. Kind of looks like the old game character Dizzy, the like egg with feet.
Yeah.
And then they find like a circle of wolf statues around a dead lamb, and then they get jump scared. And then there's an anomaly where they end up in front of like a biblically accurate angel.
Yeah.
Guarding a gate. And when the player tries to get close, the angel swings a flaming sword, which I caught. I don't know if there's any like, ooh, look at this type videos like Nexpo or Nightmind or what have you.
Not for Viverta yet.
Yeah, but... not yet. But I want it to be known that I caught that all on my own, that yes. flaming sword. And then there is a section where the player is like told that they need to eat some food, and they go to a tree and they pick up some fruit. And then they get, like, attacked or something.
Yeah.
Or no, I think that happens before the angel. And then the angel is right afterwards.
Yes, yes.
And it's like the Garden of Eden eating the forbidden fruit and getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
And then they're in, like, a meat hellscape. And they see, like, a zombie blue baby version of the archaeologist. Who's saying how, like, the smiling one needs money for a carnival. And then finally... the player ends up in, like, I think Mateo's house.
Yes.
And there are, like, pictures, which are apparently drawn by an Argentinian artist.
Yes, there's one extremely famous one. It's, the slightly more famous version is, just, like, slightly different than the original one. But it's the picture of Jesus, like, holding up a hand, and then from Jesus emanates a rainbow.
Oh, well... I was going to mention there's a different artist as well who drew, like, sketches.
Oh, yes.
And they were supposedly having... this artist supposedly had precog powers. And, like, one of the sketches showed, like... I think it was a picture of an angel. I'm not sure. But that image gets referenced with, like, the Statue of Liberty or something.
Yes.
Because there's
yes.
a bit where they bomb the Statue of Liberty.
They don't bomb the Statue of Liberty. They fly a plane delivering packages, and the Statue of Liberty randomly pops up.
Right.
It's an anomalous, like, object generation. It should also just be noted that, like while obviously the within meta stuff is, like, the game being a real game, real lost game, quote-unquote, and, you know, like, the people presumably being fake people who are trapped in this game or what have you, the references to, like, Christianity and religion are all real references. Like, these are real artists that it is yeah. using for thematic relevance.
It's like metatextuality, where it specifically alludes to existing other works to further the narrative or the themes of the story.
Yes.
Including, as you said, that last painting with Jesus.
Yes. I love this. As somebody who grew up Catholic, I am an atheist, as tends to be the case. No.
Oh, what's this hat on the floor?
So as somebody who grew up Catholic, not going to say a lot about many Catholic people. There are good people and bad people. The church itself is, you know...
not all Catholics, hashtag.
Basically. But... I do genuinely love, essentially, the lore of the Catholic Church. Like, you can't exist for literally thousands of years and not have, like, really interesting stuff about you. And so, like, I love this take, this, like, view into these various biblical happenstances and using, you know, these biblical tales to tell this story. That, like, seems to be about, you know, like, people getting uploaded sort of, quote-unquote, I won't say standard. It's a trope.
Yeah.
It seems to be a take on the, like, trope of, you know, people getting uploaded into video games and then losing themselves.
Right. There's also some elements of the personalization AI, seemingly.
Yes.
Similarly, there's, like, references to a piece of headwear that the player would wear during playing the game. You know, kind of like the personalization headgear that often would be included in like the Mario 64 stuff.
Yeah.
Brainwave.
Yeah, it is really well done. I love it. It according to some of the comments, it seems to have thematic relevance to like current goings on in Argentina, and certainly a lot of its history as well. And that's, again, a very interesting angle that we don't get a lot of.
Yeah.
As English speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I love this series so much.
Mm-hmm. So the first video on the channel, though, was the guy kind of filming himself walking through the woods to dig up the box. It reminded me a lot of Inscription, actually.
Yeah.
But so he mentions a statuette that was near the box of VHSs. And the camera just kind of glides over that. And so when I was watching it, I posted a comment that linked to that timestamp and was like, is that the statuette? And he said, yes, here's a better picture. And linked a picture of the statuette, which he later in another comment said was a statuette of the Virgin Mary. It looks like the thing that was phasing in and out behind the priest in the church. And yes. He also updated the description of the video to include that picture. So, yeah, it's like, here's the thing for me. Obviously, fantastic web series. Is it an ARG Y/N?
Yes.
That's what I want to know, because this is interaction that I had asked a question to the creator, and in-universe, the creator responded, and it has provided new information about the world. Now, will that have an outcome change? Because that is sort of part of the ARG, is that the outcome can change, or the player has effect on the story, versus just interaction. Yeah, where does it fall on the scale from ARG to Petscop?
Yeah, yeah. I'm really excited. So unfortunately, as far as literally Googling it, I know it is a fake game, obviously, mm-hmm. but like, as far as literally Googling it, Valle Verde is the name of a million different fucking restaurants.
Yeah, or just like neighborhoods or real places.
Yeah. You should be able to find it online just by looking up Valle Verde or like Valle Verde English, you know, gameplay, Justin Bieber, free iPhone. But like as far as the sort of like ARG aspect of like link hunting, uncertain where it is right now. I feel like we might be able to find like a dead website link, possibly, you know, fingers crossed, essentially. But yeah, whether this is a actual ARG where we're going to have input and going to have to reply with YouTube videos of us playing songs on the ocarina, or whether this is just going to be, I say just, but whether this is going to be a, you know, a full narrative exploration where there isn't a whole lot of, you know, audience interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Uncertain at this time. We'll have to wait for episode 2. But honestly, once episode 2 is out, we should definitely do a watch along, because mm-hmm. I'm so excited about this series.
I'm so excited about this series. We're already almost an hour through this episode.
That's true. Do we want to hit just a couple of little highlights, things we've sure. recently been doing?
Yeah. Okay, Sonic Frontiers. Really interesting game. We did a trailer blazes about it. I was pretty sure it was going to be bomb. It's actually pretty good. It does the Elden Ring thing where it's not really an open world. It's several small open continents. I say the Elden Ring thing. They're probably in development at the same time.
It's basically Sonic Elden Ring.
Mm-hmm. The story is actually pretty good for a Sonic game, which isn't saying much, but it's still notable. It has a lot of references to older Sonic games. You may have seen that Sega put out a job listing for a Sonic lore manager who had managed the continuity of the Sonic games. And with this game, it feels like they actually do want continuity to be more of a thing. I've talked about on my stream before that, like, Sega seems allergic to continuity, or like they really tease it. They like want there to be continuity between the games, but they don't want the games to be in a storyline. So they have just like references, or they, you know, offhand jokes without clear like this, then this, then this, which has led to what I call the many Sonic Adventures 3. Sonic Heroes, Shadow the Hedgehog, Sonic 06, Sonic Battle, and so forth. But like they reference like all those games. They reference Sonic 3, which is really surprising. They just have a screenshot of Sonic 3. They reference Sonic Adventure 1 and 2. They reference Sonic Heroes. They have a level from Sonic Adventure 2. They just remade Skyrail.
Yeah.
I was showing Galen that. I did like a play-by-play side-by-side of like, this is Skyrail. This is the new one. They're the same level.
They just are. It's really great.
The writing is actually pretty good. I love the bits with Sonic and Knuckles together. Knuckles, this is also like one of my favorite iterations of Knuckles because it feels the most Knuckles that Knuckles has been. I love Himbo Knuckles from like Sonic Boom cartoon and stuff like that. But like the Knuckles here actually is like an archaeologist almost, which is very Knuckles.
Yeah, that's very fitting.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs in a museum.
Oh, no.
Well, what I've been playing recently is Final Fantasy Adventure, Final Fantasy 14.
Final Fantasy Adventure, rolling around at the final sound. Got places to go, gotta ride a chocobo.
That's pretty good. Plus two. If you want more jokes like that, follow me at finalfantasy.galen.matthew.netsurferpro.
Not a real website.
Not a real website. We're not the McElroy brothers. We're not actually buying a website for this. But I've also been playing Deep Rock Galactic because very recently the Plaguefall expansion has popped up, which is a expansion, well, it's season. So Deep Rock Galactic does something that I genuinely kind of like, which is the current language of video games is battle passes. It just is. That's not strictly a good or bad thing. That's just what it is. But Deep Rock is a game where you pay one, it has always wanted to stick to the principle of you pay one price, you get a full game. There are multiple cosmetic DLCs. Those are almost entirely just to support the creators, who are creators worth supporting. And so it has a battle pass system, but there is no way to speed track it in any way. And this happened with the previous season as well. Everything from the battle pass, if you do not get it through the battle pass, will be made available as just actual cosmetic purchasables and stuff, because the whole game, the whole game after the game itself is, you know, getting a bunch of minerals within the caves that then you can purchase various upgrades for weapons and or cosmetics for. As far as the gameplay itself, it is still very much the awesome Deep Rock Galactic experience that I love so much. The use of lighting is extremely good. The tone setting is very good. The comedy is always on point, honestly. This is a very funny game. I quote it very regularly. Rockin' Stone it has a dedicated Rockin' Stone button. I love a dedicated Rockin' Stone button. Yeah, the Plaguefall Season 3, it has added, it has added more. It is more of the Deep Rock Galactic that you love, and it is it's a fun time. I genuinely love this game so much. It is, I think, top 20 on my list.
The Simpsons did a Death Note parody.
Yes.
So, Treehouse of Horror just aired recently. I'm a pretty big Simpsons fan, but I haven't caught up with the recent seasons. I've heard they're pretty good, though, that it's kind of been a bit of a comeback. But, so Simpsons did a Death Note parody. Apparently the animation studio that oversaw this parody was the studio behind Death Note's anime adaptation.
Nice.
I love all the character designs. They have, it's mainly Lisa in the rest of the Simpsons, and then like Mr. Burns, and then, those are the main characters that appear prominently. Oh, Kent Brockman appears a lot. But they have a lot of side characters in the background. Like, you can see anime versions of Ned Flanders, Disco Stew, Sherry and Terry, Milhouse's mom, I don't remember her name. Yeah, a lot of people. It's really fun always to see like characters remade in a different art style. Shoutouts to Fusionfall.
Genuine shoutouts to Fusionfall, honestly, that's a whole ass episode too.
Yeah. The parody is very true to Death Note. It has like a rule added that wasn't in the original series, but it makes sense and gives it both a new angle for comedy and like plays around with the weird racky rule set behind the Death Note.
Yeah.
It kind of fast forwards through a lot of the schemes, but it does mimic a lot of famous shots from Death Note, like Light striking a pose with the pen in his hand, a bunch of stuff in Lisa's room mimics Light's room. The lighting, the arrangement of the furniture.
the lighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lisa is in this case the light instead of light. She's the one who finds the Death Note. She's using it to take out the CEOs and the executives of a global warming corporation.
Yeah.
Literally a corporation bent on warming the globe to drown the world. It has the names from Fighting Baseball as the executives.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, you've just got her like writing like Willie Dustis and Mike Truck in her death tome, as they call it.
It's very good.
I love me a Fighting Baseball reference.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Lisa comes to face with L, which is L. Barto, which is a genius play. Bart, in this case, he first appears kind of scrunched down the way L sits in a chair.
Yeah.
He has bags under his eyes. Really clever way to interpret Bart's hairstyle, by the way.
Yeah. It's very on point, pun mm-hmm. intended.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the big bit of, like, Bart's like, wait, would you really kill me, Lise? Good parody. I'm gonna sort of go over some stuff mentioned by The Real Jims, who is a Simpsons tuber on YouTube. Apparently, the first time they did a Death Note parody in the Simpsons comics before, but it was not as accurate or close to the original Death Note. It was more just treating it as a spooky item.
Yeah.
And in that one, Bart was the one with the Death Note, and Lisa was the one who was made to look like L, but there was a, you know, final hour reveal that was really funny about who L really was. It wasn't Lisa, though. And in this one, Lisa is Light and Bart is L, which makes sense for sort of who Lisa is as a character, and Bart being her adversary makes sense. My fan casting in this case would be for Lisa to be Light and Martin to be L. The character who Lisa is like actual academic rivals with would have been great. But the other thing is that I think this was said in the comments. It's really refreshing for an adult animated cartoon to do an anime parody that isn't like a fusion of Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, and Sailor Moon with huge eyes and Speed Racer dubbing.
Yeah, fucking Stinko Man style parody. Okay.
Yes.
That was in
2001, though. Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is, like, a lot of, like, anime parody, quote-unquote, even to this day, is stuck in that era.
Yeah.
Much like how, like, a lot of meme representation is stuck in, like, fucking mid-2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's refreshing to see, like, as someone who has read a lot of Death Note, have not seen the full anime, it is, like, it is really, really good. It is a really fun take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the fun little twist that they add is, like, so, like, it's such a good vehicle for comedy and also just really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's spoilers exactly yeah. to say, but,
spoilers
like,
for a Treehouse of Horror episode.
Yeah. So the twist is that, all of the deaths have to be unique, which is such a wonderful little, like, that's good for a gag. That's also really good as, like, just genuinely thinking about that as a, like, Death Note addition, honestly.
Yeah, part of the thing in Death Note is that, like, normally, if you don't list a cause of death, they die by a heart attack. And the reason why L is able to find out that Light lives in Japan is partially because Light doesn't give a cause of death early on. So they all keep dying of heart attack.
Yeah.
Which means that, like, Light has to start mixing up how they die. So in a way, it eventually naturally becomes different causes of death as a form of strategy. Whereas yeah. in The Simpsons, to save time, they just codify it and yeah. use that as humor.
Although it is fun that the very first death is by heart attack mm-hmm. as a direct reference yeah. to that.
And the first death in Death Note is somebody doing a hostage. Yep. You're holding hostage. And in The Simpsons, it is the same thing. It's a guy holding a hostage.
Yeah, yeah. I also loved the bit of Burns dying because there was an amount of gore, heavy yeah. air quotes gore. I was not expecting it for The Simpsons, but I do not actually watch a lot of The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Least of all Treehouse of Horror, which requires, yeah. from my understanding, a little more getting into the spirit of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
The Westworld parody was also very good.
Yeah. I'll bring that up in a moment. I did want to say there's some fun, like, salaryman comedy in this Death Note parody. Mr. Burns looks like Igor from Persona.
Yes.
Which is fantastic. Like, whoever decided that was the design was correct.
Yeah, was inspired. It's it's one-to-one, especially since in Persona 5, he fucking nearly sounds like Mr. Burns.
Also, apparently the ending of the Treehouse of Horror skit is a reference to a fan theory that's pretty common. So that's pretty pog. So the Westworld parody, though, was essentially a play on Simpsons memes, which is fantastic, because Simpsons shitposting has gotten so advanced. Like, Simpsons quotes are sort of a favorite pastime of Simpsons fans, just quoting the Simpsons and good Simpsons bits. But with the internet and meme culture as it is, it has progressed so far. If you've ever seen, like, Lemon posting or Dud posting, Tungsten posting, my favorite's Hibbert posting, where it's Hibbert holding up the picture frame and then punching through it. But there's a bunch of, like, images people will make that are references to that, or they'll make, like, combinations of Simpsons bits, like Homer buying lemons from Sneed. Yeah, Sneed posting's another one.
Sneed posting is very good.
But so, the Simpsons world is like a theme park like Westworld, where all the Simpsons characters are robots made to act out famous Simpsons moments. And so, like, there, it starts in Marge versus the Monorail with, like, some people going up and messing around with the Monorail episode. And then they leave, and then it cuts to, like, an entire street with just every Simpsons episode going on. Yeah. I've recognized, I think, all of them. At least most of them. There's so many different references. A lot of them are, like, frame-for-frame popular memes. Eventually, while they're trying to escape the park, Homer runs into some people who try to make him go into a hedge.
Yeah.
And it's the meme of Homer backing into a hedge. And just them, for one thing, them being Australian and going, like, get in the hedge, mate.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, there's a hedge. That's really funny. But just, like, the utilization of the meme, not just in a, like, the meta context of this being a theme park of a company selling its IP.
Yeah.
Based on famous moments is such a funny way to write them, essentially just doing winks and nods to the meme fandom. Like, it's not just eat at Wendy's like a boss. It's like if that was made to make a point about how overused memes are and how they function for the company itself.
Yeah.
The bit is that if they escape the park, then they're lost IP. That instead of being robots, they refer to themselves as intellectual property.
Yeah.
There's a shot with Ralph standing at a really interesting angle, and that's
a direct reference.
A direct reference, like, for an exact shot that I've seen people edit into a Yu-Gi-Oh scene.
Yeah.
They have, like, Hank Scorpio. They have a lot of references to one-off characters and bits, like Frank Grimes, the brothel, or not brothel, the burlesque show house that Bart works at.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of costumes of characters from different episodes. Like, they have robot versions of Lisa in, like, the Florida outfit, the Lizard Queen outfit, the cool summer Lisa outfit. Just, like, all the outfits. It's such a, like, treat for Simpsons fans and fans of Simpsons memes that also uses that to, like, make a sort of satirical point about memes in marketing.
Yeah. It's really great as it's fun that Simpsons, I know that Simpsons rather famously is pretty good about, like, poking fun at their own, poking fun at the hand that feeds them.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's really fun to see them, you know, tackle meme culture TM in a way that is, like, funny, not entirely disrespectful to the people that enjoys them, but, like, also is, like, you know, when it does poke at that, is also very funny.
Yeah.
The fucking get in the hedge, mate, mm-hmm. bit is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when, spoilers, he, like, turns it around and throws them in the hedge, and they're like, oh no, we're going in the hedge, mate.
Mm-hmm. And then they die.
Yeah. It's great. There's also a moment as they're escaping where they knock down a statue of Matt Groening.
Mm-hmm. Holding Bart's hand.
Yeah.
Like Walt and Mickey.
It's very good.
Very good.
Yeah. The only other thing that I really want to talk about right now is if you want to listen to an album that might actually be a topic later, I have been listening and re-listening to AJJ the Band's People Who Can Eat People Are the Luckiest People in the World. AKA people who can eat people. AJJ standing for Andrew Jackson Jihad, who is a really long-standing and really established and talented songwriter in his own right. His People Who Can Eat People album is a album that is on the Mew core, like the Mew canon list, which is sort of how I initially found out about it. And Brave as a Noun is a song that I think from my understanding is the one that gets recommended to people as a single individual song a lot. But the whole album is exceptional. It is a wonderful exploration of like nihilism, absurdism, like the dark places of the mind, but also the humanism at the end of it. And like, it is almost certainly going to be a full topic we talk about. So in addition to Via Verde, your homework this week is to listen to People That Can Eat People Are the Luckiest People in the World.
My album recommendation for one I've been listening to a lot and a lot and a lot is Me, Myself, and Something Else by Call Me Malcolm. It is a ska punk concept album that has to deal with like mental illness, disability, especially like genetic disability, the 24/7 news cycle, and sort of unity in the face of oppression. Banger album, big recommend. What is the name of the song that... Oh, it's, Look Up What You Burn. That is, I think, the best, like, thesis song for the album. If you're trying to, like, look up one song from it, look up What You Burn. And, I guess look up at the sky and, you know, enjoy the sunlight while you can, because it's getting cold.
Yeah, it's, it should be getting, winter pretty soon, the most wonderful time of the year. I say that, but it's 70 in November.
Yeah. We should get Lisa a death tome.
We really should.
Until then, thanks for listening. This has been Talk Surfer Show, a part of NetSurfer Pro. You can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review, let us know how we're doing. Let us know what suggestions you have for topics you'd want to see us cover in a future episode. You can also follow us on Twitter at NetSurfer Pro. Maybe, you know, have to do something else in the future, but for now we're just on Twitter.
Yeah, if there are any updates, we'll almost certainly come from there if we end up deciding to switch to Tumblr or something. Mm-hmm.
Where you can get updates on when our new episodes go live, and also teasers for upcoming episodes in the form of little emoji riddles. Try to solve them. There's one that we didn't do from October that we will do in the future.
Yeah. So, that's an extended challenge for you people. Mm-hmm. Solve the Minotaur's Labyrinth.
Yeah, sure. You know, nowadays, like, all the walls are kind of torn down. It's very easy to solve.
That's a good point.
You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming. Or no, sorry. You can follow me on Twitter at Twakaroo. That's TWAKAROO. I tweet, you know, jokes I think of, funny things, whatever things, complaining about people, complaining about Rivals of Aether. And I post updates on all the projects I'm working on, including when I go live on my stream, which is twitch.tv/twak, twitch.tv/twak. I stream during weekdays, and I am raising money for Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation because November is National Diabetes Awareness Month.
Yeah.
I am going to be playing Fortune Street.
Nice.
Pajama Sam 1.
Nice.
I am going to be playing The Witness Randomizer. And to cap it off, La Mulana 2 Randomizer.
I'm not excited about that one.
Oh my god. La Mulana 2 is already a fucked game. With a randomizer, it's even fuckeder.
That sounds awesome. I will have to not miss any of those streams.
I haven't thought of a donation incentive because there is just a charity fundraiser in October or September that I did do a lot of fundraising for, and I had this whole incentive scheme. But maybe if I raise like $150, I'll come up with something.
Yeah. Well, please make sure to check that out. As for myself, you can find me at TikTok and on Twitter at Galen Wilson. That's at GALANWLS0N. I post my hot takes and might transfer fully to Tumblr, which you can actually find at twitter.com/GalenWilson. There is no zero on that O. You can also find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where I'll probably post a video one of these days. And you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/machinegunvampire, where I might end up streaming something a little fun. It's nothing related to this, but you know, I've been having an idea for a stream that I've wanted to do for a while, and I might just do it.
Then do it, nerd.
I guess I'm gonna have to do it. I've been called a nerd.
Do it. Just do it.
Don't let your dreams
be memes?
Yeah.
Don't let your dreams fleam. Scream.
Scream. Anyway, now that we've been bought out, this is the kind of comedy you can expect, because we're going to have to sell out super hard.
Yeah.
Like real big fish.
It turns... Yes. Damn. why did Ed and Scott quit? That's the pressing question. Why did Ed and Scott quit? Tell me.